out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 11th of April, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. We have had a few issues with the radio server over the last 24 hours, but I'm hoping we've got them all ironed out now. So I do apologise if people were listening to the stream and it cut out there. We were migrating everything over to HTTPS and that should all be finished with now. I've also been away for a few days. I went to the Awakening conference in Helsinki, which was excellent. 200 people there. Really, really fine alpha type people there. I was really, really impressed with the standards of the conference and the standards of the people. And Helsinki was an amazingly friendly city as well. The Finnish people are very, very friendly and I do recommend people go there. Hopefully they'll be having another one next year. And I wish we could have as many people at our conferences in Britain that they managed to get there. 200 people they had, and apparently there was another 100 that wanted to go that they had to turn away, which is a really good showing. I got to meet Millennial Woes, and he's very much the same in real life as he is in his videos, so that was good. And talking to other people there, Jared Taylor was good, but you would think they would they would know by now that when Jared Taylor comes on that you've got to turn the mic up to double volume because he does have a very quiet voice. Greg Johnson's speech was very good as well. A guy from Menafrego, he was there. I thought I recognised that voice. Where do I recognise that voice from? And it was, yeah, for the Menafrego podcast. So a lot of big names that they managed to get there, and it was very, very good. And hopefully we'll hear more from them. And that's what I've been up to. And you will also have heard my co-host today, Florin Geyer from Mysterium Fasces, brought out his first monologue this week, which we published yesterday. So I do recommend listeners check that out. And as I say, I've got him on the show today. So Florin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just grand. Life's going really well. Although, unfortunately, as always, the news stories we cover today, you could put a little bit of a damper in that brightness.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shock, really. I thought that was it now in Syria. I thought Assad had pretty much managed to get rid of the terrorists. 90% of them, I believe, he'd removed from Ghouta. They'd already said, we've cleansed the area. It's now back in the hands of the Syrian government. We've just got a few pockets of resistance left. I watched the buses all leave, all the terrorists moving to another area. And then suddenly we hear, oh no, suddenly he's decided to start gassing his own people again once he'd already actually won. It's just unbelievable that anybody could actually fall for this, let alone the president of the United States. I just can't believe it. And on top of that, we've also seen a complete pantomime at the UN. You've got Nikki Haley talking in the usual language that she does about what a devil Bashar al-Assad is and all these poor children that are being gassed. And then you've got the Russian guy who's saying, well, there's no actual evidence for this. And when he starts speaking, and when the Syrian envoy starts speaking, everybody walks out of the UN in this big show of leaving the room. And then at the end of it, they're all shaking hands and kissing each other on the cheek. The Russian envoy is kissing Nikki Haley on the cheek. And it just shows you that the whole thing is a pantomime. I don't think we're going to see war in Syria. I think this is, I think this is just Trump beating the war drums and rattling his saber, and they make a big show of it in the UN. But I honestly don't think anything is going to come of this. What are your thoughts on it, Florian?
Well, I mean, I would really love to believe that. I mean, obviously, any sort of, you know, U.S.-Russia military encounter in the Middle East would be disastrous and, you know, could potentially lead to extremely, extremely negative, you know, geopolitical effects. The U.S. has no capacity to fight protracted war against Russia, as has been discussed many, many times on this program and on many other programs on the Radio Area Network. So, you know, any sort of any species of military encounter or investment in Syria is a disaster for the Western parties and for their civilian population. But I would just, yeah, kind of go back to this. This has been going on for 5 years now. That's how long, the war in Syria. And in every couple of months, as soon as the Assad regime, you know, comes close to stabilizing power in a certain region, comes close to defeating, you know, the jihadis, it's just, it's like clockwork. It's like magic. There's some allegation of a chemical attack, or somehow they mysteriously get more money and troops. Somehow there's a new Western intervention. Some new force of paramilitaries, you know, enters his sovereign territory and causes trouble for him. There's always some new pretense in order to intervene and to prolong the conflict. It's quite a remarkable string of coincidences.
It's almost like there's a plan. It's almost like there's a plan, isn't there? Like as if they had a as if they had a plan to go into Syria and take it over, that they sort of wrote down and told everybody after the 9/11 attacks. Is that correct? Do you remember that? A plan for the new American century or something?
Exactly. That's absolutely correct. The plan for a new American century, right? So we've known this for the last 20 years that there has been a goal to systematically topple each of the, you know, secular and more independent actors in the Middle East that aren't willing to go along with the Zionist Saudi American geopolitical machinations, Shia or Sunni, as we've seen with, you know, Gaddafi in Libya. Of course, what's going on in Iran with Bashar al-Assad, Saddam Hussein, right? Although his case was kind of a good warning to the world that, you know, you never work with the devil because it always comes to bite you in the back. He always betrays you in the end. And so, yeah, so we've come back to this very same situation. And I thought that the very, very the most elucidating and funniest explanation of this that I saw was kind of people are sharing around this Tucker Carlson video on Fox. Now, you know, I'm not a big shill for Tucker Carlson, but I thought that the symbolism of the conversation was so brilliant that it couldn't be ignored. He basically asked this senator what United States security interest does intervening in Syria represent? And the man literally started out with the line, "Ah, well, if you care about Israel, you see, dot, dot, dot."
That's what it all boils down to, isn't it? Every time, that's what it boils down to. It's just doing the bidding of the Jews. Every one of those wars has been to the benefit of Israel. And it hasn't benefited America. It hasn't benefited Britain. And each time we there are false flags that are involved. And it's almost like a dirty word. So much conspiracy stuff talks about false flags, but they do occur. And, you know, this is what we saw happen with the Iraq war, with the weapons of mass destruction. And even this time, the Russian state warned us that this was going to happen a couple of weeks back. They said we have found the place where they were making up the chemical weapons. We are fully expecting there to be a false flag style chemical weapons attack within the next month. We've also intercepted information from America. We know how this stuff was sent in. It was sent in through the NGOs, through the convoy that they had. You remember a couple of weeks back when they were saying, oh, you've got to cease the fighting and allow in all the humanitarian aid. Well, in with that humanitarian aid, there were chemicals and to be used as weapons. And the Russian state discovered this, and they made that known. It was even in the Daily Mail. And then when something happens, when this false flag happens, instead of saying, well, we know exactly what this is, they just jump on it straight away. There's no evidence that anyone's actually been even hit with chemical weapons. People went into the hospital. I think 6 or 7 people went in with symptoms, but they didn't actually have any physical evidence of it. And the Russians have gone in there, the Russian medics, to check this. The Syrian government have gone in there to check this. The Russian government are now saying, we want the you know, the International Chemical Weapons Watchdogs to go in there and check this. But we're not being told that. On the BBC News, they're saying, oh, Russia is vetoing a bill that would send in the Chemical Weapons Watchdogs. But that's because this bill automatically blames President Assad for it. Exactly the same as happened last year. They wanted to, we were being told, oh, Russia is stopping the Chemical Weapons Watchdogs going in there. But no, it was a bill that specifically blamed President Assad for that gas attack that Donald Trump did go in and start blowing things up. And again, the Americans have admitted since then that they actually had no evidence. And you know what this reminds me of, Florian? It reminds me of this Skripal nonsense that we're being told in Britain about how Russia has tried to assassinate this other Russian spy, and they've got no evidence for that whatsoever. None at all. Boris Johnson went on German television and said, Porton Down, our own British chemical weapons factory, have said that categorically that it came from Russia. And yet when the guy was interviewed, he said, no, we haven't got any evidence to show that it was made in Russia. We can tell you it was Novichok, but that's all. So our government have been caught out lying about this. They're just desperate to pin the blame for these things on Russia and Syria. And if you notice that the narrative has been, this is down to Putin. It's not so much that, of course, they're talking about Assad, but they're also saying this is directly down to Putin because he's been protecting President Assad. It just seems to me that they don't think they actually need any evidence anymore. The rule of law it just doesn't exist. They can just make things up as an excuse to go in and attack a country. And the reason why I don't think it's going to happen is because it would start off World War III if they started attacking Russia. Or maybe they would attack Russia, and because they have been attacked before, and maybe Putin would be sensible and say, look, we'll de-escalate things. Because I know that, I think, didn't Russia get hit at one point by the Americans a while back? And Putin didn't retaliate? Or am I thinking of something else?
You're probably thinking about how the Turks shot down a Russian jet and killed a Russian pilot.
Yeah, and that's the one.
Putin decided to de-escalate.
That's the one. That's the one. Right. That's a sensible thing to do, isn't it? Is to try and de-escalate things, not to encourage more. Assad has de-escalated things. Think how many times that Israel have gone in there illegally and bombed Syria, and instead of retaliating, you know, he's just made it clear that they have broken international law by doing that. I mean, how long can it go on for, though, with the rest of the world breaking international law and attacking the country? Sooner or later,
I think that
someone's got to fight.
All of these points are so important, Sven. I mean, there's a couple of things I want to go to here, but they're all equally as important. One, I think, is going back to the missile strike that Trump did on that air base in Syria last year around this time. And I remember when that happened, that for me is what really signaled the reality of the Donald Trump presidency. And because it demonstrated that, okay, well, if Donald Trump can be used as a implement of the Zionist foreign policy, of their geopolitical strategy once, then of course it can happen again. And it revealed, I think, to everybody, to who was paying attention, who wasn't blinded by, you know, utility or propaganda, that in fact he is, though of course he might have good qualities, he is in fact still an instrument of Zog. And so the fact that he's done this again doesn't surprise me at all whatsoever. Because in all of these instances, you know, people are essentially relying on, you know, Trump's outward kind of braggadocio, you know, foolish, bombastic Twitter tweets as the representation of his foreign policy decision making. When, well, obviously, you know, this guy has access to, you know, intelligence reports and to these sort of things if he wants them. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's capable of making these geopolitical discernments when Russia is literally releasing articles saying, hey, there's going to be a false flag attack in mainstream news. I think that Donald Trump, you know, president of the United States, it might be able to have one or two of the intelligence agents work for him, you know, kind of give him some analysis on the situation that isn't totally insane. So it demonstrates that, of course, he's for whatever reason, who knows if it's his personal conviction or he's made a deal with the devil or, you know, he's being threatened. It's impossible to discern that he's working hand in glove with the Zionist foreign policy interests. And that's what's going on here. So to what extent this is going to be pushed and maneuvered, I don't know. The reason why I'm concerned is because what we have seen is in the last 5 years, we have seen, in fact, a buildup to World War III, to actual unarmed conflict with Russia. All of the different markers point towards this end. We have the economic, the trade war angle, the military buildup in Western Europe, the sanctions situation in the Ukraine. There's been three or four different zones in the world where a proxy war has been initiated in an attempt to provoke this conflict with Russia. And so I think that this is why, ultimately, I'm quite a bit of a fatalist when it comes to these things. I mean, I think that, we can analyze it by sort of in the hands of God. But I think that this kind of – that set the stage really for what we're seeing now. And what happened last year is that Putin actually did play 4D chess and did play masterfully diffuse the situation as he has been doing for the last 5 years in the Middle East and has been successfully outmaneuvering the Americans. But indeed, in kind of going – I was just going to say, and going back to the Skripal thing, it's the same thing. I mean, there's no evidence. I mean, this is what – people are saying this openly. Putin said this openly, that it was probably a British intelligence false flag terror attack in order to blame the Russians. I mean, because that's the question that one must always ask themselves when these events happen. Who benefits? Right? And if the blamed actor, the blamed party, doesn't benefit from such an attack, then probably it's not them. It's a usual good marker to check off.
Yeah, you would think that they would think things through a little bit more carefully and make it a little bit more believable, let the chemical attack go off when there were still 50% of the terrorists in Ghouta, or maybe they would attack Skripal when he was a little bit further away than 8 miles from the United Kingdom chemical weapons facility. It's really sloppy work. I think maybe, looking back to some of the work Michael Hoffman has done about the revelation of the method, and he says that they like to do this. They like to make it look as if things are really sloppy. They like to be open about this, so they're in effect rubbing salt into the wound. They are telling us something, a bald-faced, open lie, which is obviously a lie, because they get off on the fact that we end up having to believe it. We end up having to go along with it. It's like a show of power to them, isn't it? That they can get away with it.
That is exactly it. That was the third point that I was coming to after the Skripal case, is that, yes, we are living in these revelation of the method times where, you are making a mistake if you do not presume that the government is run by bandits with no regard for the laws which they themselves have artificially set up. And so the government style, anarcho-tyranny, and these are the days that we're living in. And so if your mindset assumes, in fact, that we are dealing with criminal bandits, with murderers and degenerates who are capable of anything in order to advance their own personal career and their own tribal interests, and ultimately, I would contend, to advance spiritual evil, then a lot of these things will.
You just cut out there. You just cut out there. Do you just want to repeat that last bit, Florian?
Yeah, I was just saying that I totally agree with you and with Hoffman and your assessment. Is I think that what's going on is that we've reached the point where they're no longer attempting to use evidence to support or any sort of truthhood in order to support their lie. They are kind of pushing on with these flimsier and flimsier stories. And this demonstrates one thing or another, and perhaps both. It either demonstrates that they believe that they have such an iron grip over the minds and the souls and the mechanisms of power in the Western world that they no longer need to use these excuses to cover up their dastardly deeds and their covert actions. Or it demonstrates that they've gotten to the point where they have become so insane that they no longer believe that they need to, kind of produce a doctor's note for their interventions in the Middle East. That any sort of flimsy, two-bit homeless man riding on the street will suffice as a casus belli for war. And so I think that the revelation of the method is kind of predicated upon both of these ideas. It's when the level of consolidation reaches that kind of saturation, that full spectrum dominance. But even more than that, we talked about this on Mysterium Fasces many times before, that people often make the mistake of thinking that sinful power and this kind of titanic, monstrous, tyrannical force, that this in and of itself is ordered. if you see what I'm saying. And that's not true. What happens is that when you build an edifice on deception, on lies, on underhanded dealing, on low trust, on blackmail, on raw violence or the manipulation by the passions, it's actually an extremely unstable and degenerate system. And the exponentially larger it grows, the more unstable its internal structure is by consequence. And so what I think that what happens is when you reach the point where that, you know, Babylonian tower is large enough that they're willing to kind of just, you know, ignite the all-seeing eye and engage in these overt, you know, schemes without any pretense, this also is a signal that the tower itself is internally weak because it cannot reach such heights using such mechanisms without, by its very nature, exposing itself to the consequences of sinful systematic living, which is instability. It's not productive to order. It's not productive to life, as we know.
Well, I think there's a Talmudic mentality there as well. I mean, in the Talmud, it says that they've got to hide their power and not alter with the rules that they make and the laws that they make. And then once they finally have control, then they can bring in the laws of the Talmud, the laws that elevate Jews to higher positions than everyone else. And that's what we've seen now. We see that we're not able to criticize them. We're not able to say anything that they don't like comes under the heading of anti-Semitism. We're not allowed to question their power. All of this is laid out in the Talmud, and it's similar to this, this revelation of the method where they hide things until they have enough power and then they can be open about them. I mean, one thing that I do sometimes wonder about is what is it that Putin has done, and what is it that he could do to get them off his back? Because whenever they talk about him, they say, oh, he invaded the Crimea. But what do they expect him to do? He's got, what, 99% Russian people live in the Crimea, and they all voted that they wanted to rejoin Russia. What does the world expect? Do you expect all the Crimeans to move out of Crimea and go to Russia? Is that what this is about? You know, that can't be what this is about. Is it about him standing in the way of Syria? Is it about him protecting Syria? Well, he was invited in there to protect Syria. Russia is the only country, aside from Iran and Lebanon, that are legally allowed in Syria. They've been invited in there by the democratically elected government. You know, the Americans and British are committing war crimes by being in that country, and America especially by saying that they're not going to leave. Nobody invited them there in the first place. They were going to set up a border force. They were going to carve the country up and give part of the country to the Kurds without any say-so from the actual legitimate Syrian government. So what is it that Putin has done? Is it the symbol of Putin, the fact that he doesn't just go along with everything that America says? Is it the fact that he stands against the liberal agenda? He won't teach homosexuality to children. He makes the Disney films that show homosexuality into X-rated adult films over there with a censorship. Is it his support for the Orthodox Christian Church? Is it his support for tradition? What is it do you think, Florian, that it really is that gets him? Because they really hate him. They really hate him. I mean, Dr. Johnson has made the point so many times that even at the height of the Cold War, they weren't like this with the leaders of the Soviet Union. And now this isn't the Soviet Union, who was supposedly our enemy. This is Russia. And as far as I can see it, all he's done is go into Crimea with a mandate to go in there by 99% of the country, and gone in and defended Syria with a mandate to by the 80 or 90% of the Syrians that actually voted for Assad, and you know, that they see Putin as a hero that's liberated their country. And yet he is the most hated man alive, you would think, listening to the rhetoric and seeing the lies that people will tell about him. I mean, Boris Johnson is just desperate to say anything that he can get away with about Putin. They're desperate to make everybody hate him. And you know, I really can't see what it is that he's done to deserve so much hatred. It's almost as if he has stood up and said, I'm going to protect the white race, you know, let's gas the kikes. And he hasn't. He really hasn't done anything that extreme to be hated so much by the rest of the world. What do you think about it, Florian? What is it about Putin that really gets them, do you think?
Honestly, this is a really good question. So much of it is shrouded in mystery and veiled and occulted by purpose, by definition, that It's designed to make it difficult to discern what the actual motivations here are. I think that probably there's a certain spiritual dimension to it. The exact nature of that I couldn't opine. I would say that really when it comes back to it is that Putin is an independent geopolitical actor. This is the real and hard conclusion that I've come to. And, you know, people, you know, I run into people every day of the week that all shit dog Jutin shills, excuse the vulgarity and all that business. But every single thing that I've ever seen watching this man operate and watching what he's done speaks to me of somebody who is independent of the kind of Zionist world system. And that I think that this is the great threat, is that because Russia, if mobilized for, you know, its own independent foreign policy aims, you know, can take on the New World Order by itself. And it almost did so at the turn of the century, which is why they had it destroyed during World War One. And so that would be my great thesis. I think that it comes down to that Putin is fundamentally an independent geopolitical actor. And he doesn't suffer from the wholesale entanglement with a technocratic regime that a place like China does, where their country was taken over by the cultural and monetary imperialists of the West, right? Like the OSS, you know, set up the Communist Party of China's Red Army and so on, and gave them a whole bunch of money, just like they did for the Vietnamese liberation forces in Vietnam. Mainstream history, you know, Rockefeller Chase Bank was the first bank in China during the 50s, you know, and so I think that that's probably what it comes back to. I would just say one thing that before we depart, because it came poignantly to my mind, we can learn from Jesus Christ a very important lesson about dealing with people with the Talmudic mentality when people are in bad faith. You read the gospel when Jesus is dealing with the Pharisees, he knows when people come and ask him questions in bad faith. And many of his more famous sayings come because he's giving people kind of brilliant answers to questions that were designed to entrap and ensnare him. And so if you think, for instance, when they ask him, should we pay taxes, right? This is one of the many instances because they want him to say, oh, no, don't pay taxes, and then he's in revolt to Caesar, or, oh, yes, pay taxes, and then he's, you know, conceding to an occupying power. And that where he picks up the coin and he says, render unto Caesar what is due to Caesar, and render unto God what is due to God, and so on. We see this also with the woman who was to be stoned for adultery, where it was illegal to put someone to death if you weren't a Roman, you didn't have Roman authority behind you under Mosaic law. It was illegal, although Mosaic law said that adulterers should be stoned to death. And so they were trying to get him to either overthrow Roman law or to overthrow Mosaic law. And he was able to very brilliantly call out their deception and to expose them as the hypocrites, you know, while avoiding the trap. And so what the point I'm getting at here is that our enemies are exactly this. These people were literally the descendants of the Pharisees, where they have their mentality. And so our Lord instructs us to be wise as serpents and to understand the nature that these serpents operate in. And this is the biggest thing, is that once your mentality switches away from attempting to engage in the enemy and these snakes and vipers in good faith and as if they have anything legitimate to say to you, or they are operating by their own internally stated rules of logic, then you really can begin to understand and be unsurprised by these developments. And this is something that I reflect on a lot, so I felt it was important to go on this little spiel, Sven. Sorry for hogging the end of your show.
Yeah, that's all right. I would recommend people do read the Gospels just to see what Jesus' replies to these people are that are asking these questions in bad faith. And it does seem relevant to me that we've got people like Britain and America that are acting in bad faith, and then you've got Putin that waits all this time before finally going into Syria with a legitimate invitation. You know, so he defeats them by doing things correctly, by holding to the truth. And I think you're right there. It's his independence that they really don't like. And what really must rub it in all the worst is how popular he is. I mean, he is independent, but he's just won an election with, what, 70% in Russia? And we've also just got some really good news from Hungary as well. I mean, Viktor Orban has just won a landslide victory in Hungary. He's won by about 50%. And the runner-up party is the Jobbik party with 20%. So in Hungary, we got 70% of the votes that were cast in the latest election were for right or far right parties, which is, you know, which is excellent, which is really, really good news. So things aren't all bad, although we might, may have, you know, more trouble in the Middle East. We've at least got a center of right wing dissent in Hungary that, the rest of Europe can coalesce around. I like to see, Austria and Poland getting together with them. And then we've got some voices there, which are going to speak up for the white man because, you know, Viktor Orban gets better by the day, by the speech, he gets better. So yeah, good luck to Hungary. And, that's a good bit of news for us to finish on, I think. Thank you very much for coming on today, Florian. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.